Automotive Sales Company – Accelerating Sustainable Mobility for All. Dear audience, my name is Ludmila Dehr. I'm the Managing Director of Elite Experts Conferences, and I would like to welcome you to the next episode of the Elite Experts Conferences podcast. Whether at live events or in the digital world, we bring together cool, promising tech startups with exciting, innovative global players and generate a platform where the world of sustainable technology meets. Get to know the different companies, but also the inspiring leader personalities behind these brand names. Our motto is towards a better and cleaner future through knowledge transfer and technology. Our guest today is Jan Van Song, the CEO of Automotive Sales Company, or short ACC. Even though ACC is brand new in the automotive industry, the same cannot be said of Jan Van Song. Jan, you bring an immense amount of experience with you. From your studies, you actually have an engineering background. Later, you added an MBA. Seeing your impressive CV, one can tell immediately that the positions in higher management are very much to your taste. You started your career at Renault in various positions, most recently as Director of Quality. This was followed by positions at AfterWAS, Alstom Transport and PSA Group. At PSA, you worked for 5 years as Industrial Director and member of the board. And today, I would like to welcome you in the position as CEO of ACC, which you have been holding for a bit more than 2 months. Since ACC is so brand new, I will briefly explain the background of this company for our audience. We can say that ACC is one of Europe's newest high-tech companies. Backed by SAF Total and Group PSA Opel, ACC's goal is to power the future of the automotive industry by innovating in battery technology. The ACC aim to produce sustainable, affordable, high-capacity and longer-life batteries. An R&D center, new state-of-the-art facility in France, and gigafactories in France and in Germany will be built. These are the plans and the goals. We have to admit, great ambitious goals. How the practical way to get there looks like and what kind of leadership qualities are needed for this task, we will find out in the process of our interview. By the way, for all those who are looking for new professional challenges, now is the time to pay special attention, because ACC is currently hiring. Let's start chronologically. The joint venture was announced in January 2020. In September 2020, Automotive Sales Company was officially founded. Looking back, when and how was this idea born?
Well, actually, Total Company and PSA Group started to discuss, let's say, roughly 2 years ago. The two companies understood at that time that ahead of them was an energy transition with significant impacts, both on the automotive industry, pushing for more and more electrified cars, but as well on the energy transition of Total, moving to renewable energy, implying to store this energy. So both companies at that time understood that it was likely that in the next years, the demand for performance batteries will grow significantly. And that was basically the strategic intent of ACC. Being able to deliver performance batteries, acknowledging that the demand for those batteries was deemed to grow, both for storage of energy, but for automotive as well.
And now looking again at ACC, what is the future vision behind ACC?
Well, future vision, I'd say it's pretty simple. If you consider the current situation where the market for electrified cars is not that big for the time being. All the batteries are supplied by Asian suppliers. All of them. They all produce in China, in Korea, in Japan, and only few of them are produced outside of Asia. I would mention only LG in Poland, which is ramping up. When we consider that the automotive market for electrified cars is deemed to grow significantly, I would say is even obliged to grow significantly to cope with the CO2 regulation, then you come very quickly to the conclusion that we can't rely anymore only on supply from Asia. We need to have a supply base closer to the consumption points in Europe, closer to the manufacturing facilities of the OEM in Europe. That's the first point. So we want to be able to deliver to European manufacturers more and more batteries. That's the first part of the vision. Second part of the vision, it's clearly that everybody has understood that an electrified car is better from an environment point of view for the citizens. You have no CO2 emission, etc. The trick is that, at least for the time being, the cost of an electrified car is significantly more expensive than the one of a classical ICE car. And within that cost, the cost of the battery is itself very important, meaning that we need absolutely to reduce the cost of the electrified car to make it affordable for most of the citizens in Europe. And it does imply reducing significantly the cost of the batteries. So therefore, we translate this into the vision of ACC, which is clearly we want to become the leader, the European leader of production of cells and modules to allow an affordable access to green mobility. We want this mobility becoming affordable for the vast majority of the people and not only for happy few who might buy a Tesla.
Sounds already like a motto, accelerating sustainable mobility for all.
Exactly, that's our motto.
After the established structures of your previous position at PSA Group, as industrial director and member of the board, you moved to this position as CEO of ACC, this newly formed joint venture between Group PSA and Total. Should one now think of this as a kind of a startup company? Or is it more like setting up the same structures like in a long established company?
Yeah, I mean, clearly our way of thinking is that we are a startup. We are a startup, even though compared to other startups, we are starting with a lot of money. Because you know that we are, on one hand, supported by all shareholders. They've committed to inject up to 1.5 billion euro in equity of the company, not immediately, but along the years, based on the investment we'll have to realize. And it's as well supported by the German and the French states, which have committed to subsidize ACC up to slightly less than 1.3 billion euro. So it's clear that no startup is starting with such promises of funding, which is a good news and at the same time highly challenging because there is no such money given if our donors aren't expecting high results. But having said that, we are a small company. For the time being, we are only 100. We'll be, let's say, 250 end of next year. And clearly, we don't want to be bureaucratic. We don't want to be heavy. We want to be very agile, very agile. And clearly, we consider ourselves as a startup. We need to be fast. And finally, a point which is very important is that whereas we have a roadmap which is very clear, whereas we have ambitions which are very clear and significant, at the same time, we need to acknowledge that our competitors are existing for years. Our Asian competitors are engineering and manufacturing batteries for years. So we need really to speed up. And to speed up, we need to be very agile, very determined, very focused. And well, that's the kind of behavior we might find in a startup. So we're a startup.
And how do you want to manage to promote innovation and increase the speed of internal processes? I mean, you have this kind of heritage from the corporate world, and okay, funding is the positive factor, but still, how can you balance it?
Well, first of all, I would say that clearly innovation is an absolute must for ACC. We won't catch up our Asian competitors if we don't innovate. Clearly, we need to bring as quickly as possible and more quickly than themselves new definition of cells in order to hope to overcome them. Otherwise, we will lag behind them, and that's not our wish. So we'll be highly digital to foster the innovation, but not only to foster the innovation, but to attract young talents. It's absolutely paramount to be able to attract not only people from all shareholders. At the beginning, it's normal. The broker, particularly the people coming from Saft, are bringing the knowledge of the batteries, of the product itself. But we want, and we've started to recruit people from outside, and because we need to rely on skills to innovate, and we'll be highly digital, highly agile, precisely to make their professional life something appreciable, something they will find fun too. And that the way we do hope we'll be able to innovate.
I hope so too for you.
Thank you, Ludmila.
It was said also initially that it would be a 50-50 joint venture, mainly for pilot production. And now I quote, during the commercial production phase, Saft's share in ACC will drop to 33%. This is a bit confusing. Could you please explain that more precisely?
Well, it's very simple. ACC will produce mostly for the automotive industry. The shareholders' agreement does allow us to sell maximum 10% of our capacity outside of the automotive industry. So clearly, the vast majority of all turnover will be made in the automotive industry. Whereas Total Saft understood that at the beginning it was necessary to support these creation of this joint venture to bring skills from Saft transferred to ACC. They acknowledge as well the fact that more and more ACC will become an automotive supplier. And from that perspective, it's not abnormal that the share of Saft does reduce over time. It's not abnormal.
You mentioned it already. What is quite different from a startup is the financing of ACC. The project is supported by the governments of Germany and France with a total of, as you mentioned, 1.3 billion euros. This was announced by PSA. In total, investment of more than 5 billion euros are planned. That sounds like a good start regarding the existing funding. Well, anyway, there are no ambitious goals without challenges along the way. What are the challenges for ACC?
Yeah, I mean, the challenges are huge. Starting point is that, as I've said earlier, the demand for batteries is deemed to grow. I mean, that's the most likely. Why is it so? Well, for a very simple reason. You know that regulation has been enforced in most of the European countries on CO2 emission. Year after year, the average value of CO2 emitted by the cars which have been registered during the year has to decrease. And to achieve the numbers which are pretty tough, you can't rely only on ICE cars. If you don't have electrified cars, you're dead. You have to pay huge penalties regardless of the impact on the brand image. So year after year, the share of the electrified cars is deemed to grow. We consider that in 2025, the OEM, the European OEM, should have to register something like 30% of the total market in electrified cars. It implies a huge demand for batteries. And so far, the demand is by far exceeding the existing capacity. So it means that the first challenge for ACC is really to set up its manufacturing facilities as quickly as possible in order to be able to deliver our customers. And the second point, as I've said, is the cost of the battery. It is a major hurdle to overcome for the OEM. If the selling price of an electrical car is not significantly reduced, then it will be a limitation to the growth of those sales. Whereas at the same time, they need those sales to counterbalance in terms of CO2 the bad impact of the ICE cars. So it's clear that for the OEM, reducing the cost of the electrical car is paramount. And to do so, they need to reduce the cost of the battery. So we are for the time being, we have one customer, which is PSA, and we are obviously looking for other customers. But the demand from those from PSA is clearly, we want to have a battery at the highest level of performance, density of energy, quality, and cost as well. So very ambitious challenges, yes.
Sounds definitely ambitious, and it's actually good. The industry can need it. It was also communicated that two large factories are to be built in Douvres, France. Please forgive my probably wrong pronunciation in French. And in Kaiserslautern in Germany. According to earlier information from Opel head Michael Lohscheller, 2,000 jobs will be created in Kaiserslautern. How is the situation in France? How many new jobs are planned to be created there?
Well, Ludmila, this question of headcount is a sensitive topic, and I really want to be honest with you. My goal is having a sustainable company, profitable company, and I do believe that any company, it's true for ACC, it's true for all the companies, the best way and even the only way to be sustainable is to be profitable. That's the only way. Anything else is demagogy. And to be profitable, let's say that I will really, well, obviously we have to be very good in terms of innovation, in terms of R&D, etc. But once we are good at those fields, there is an absolute need to reduce as much as possible the investment. And contrary to what's generally thought by some people, the less you invest, the better off you are. Because whenever you are investing, you are creating a burden to the company. And, the heavier the burden, the more difficult it will be for the company to be profitable. So that's one I want to try, obviously meeting all the technical specifications we need, but I want to try to invest as few as possible. And that's the same thing for the headcount. When we do recruit somebody, clearly in my mind, we recruit somebody for the rest of his professional life. And we don't want to recruit him and to fire him 2 years later because we are overstaffed. In a nutshell, we'll be very cautious concerning the recruitment. So it's clear that we'll need to recruit, that's for sure, both in Douvres, in Kaiserslautern, in our R&D center, in Nersac. But I'm not shooting for the biggest number. That's my point.
But for the most sustainable, which means also for the most profitable number.
Exactly.
Let me follow up on what you said before about the dominance of the Asian manufacturer of batteries. Is then the most important strategic reason for the foundation of ACC that OEMs in Europe want to become more independent from battery manufacturers in Asia, as they could otherwise dictate the prices? Is this the real driving force? Can we sum up it in this way?
I mean, I've said that in 2025, we are forecasting 30% of the total market for electrified cars, meaning that if there is no change in the size of the market, which is currently 17 million cars in Europe, we'll have 5 million electrified cars in 2025. Could we imagine that for 5 million cars, we keep on relying on the sourcing from Asia, which is 10,000 kilometers away, for a such critical component, for such an EV component? I mean, a battery pack for a car, it is 400, 500 kilograms. So can we imagine that for so many cars, such an EV product, we keep on relying on a sourcing based in Asia? So that's the first point. The second point is clearly all the OEM for such a critical product, they will try to diversify the sourcing. Relying only on an area of the world for this sourcing will be highly dangerous. So yes, to a large extent, it is a driving force.
Thank you for your honesty and for the good explanation. Back in January, the starting signal was given for a battery cell pilot production facility in southwest of France. Now it's November, and it's, as we all know, a very special year due to the pandemic. Are you satisfied with the start of the project and with what has been achieved so far?
Well, so far, we've started to build our R&D center in Bordeaux. It will be up and running mid of next year. We'll have in this R&D center all the testing labs to test the cells. We'll have a small prototype line allowing us to produce cells, and we'll have the R&D offices. Second, we have started to build indeed our prototype plant in Nersac. It is a significant investment. It is a 100 million euro investment. So it's not a small plant. It's not, we name it a prototype plant or a testing plant, but actually it's not a small plant. The building will be finished, at least the outside structure of the building will be finished end of this year. So we're moving forward pretty well. Having said that, it's clear that the pandemic has not helped. We could have been quicker. We could have created ourselves some degrees of freedom if we had not suffered from the pandemic. So it's moving forward in the right direction. It's okay, but we don't have slack.
Coming back to what you said before about PSA as the, at least for now, only one client. And you recently said also in an interview that PSA will only buy from ACC if the cells produced are priced correctly and are competitive in terms of performance. And regarding the timing, it can be said that the battery cells will only be available in initially limited quantities from the end of 2023 or the beginning of 2024. Competitive price and good performance. These are the real challenges. How will you tackle them? Where do you start there? Do you go fully into the innovation, or what is the starting point?
Well, I mean, the first point, which is very clear, is that no OEM, including our shareholder, including PSA, will buy from us if we're not competitive. I know that's the rule of the game, and I know it perfectly. Then, prior to the closing of the company, which did happen beginning of August, there were 2 years, almost 2 years, 1 year and a half, almost, well, between 1 year and a half and 2 years of discussion between the two shareholders, between SAF-Total and PSA, to prepare the start of this company. And during those years, beyond the financial discussion, etc., a lot of activities was performed by the two companies on which cells are we going to launch initially. And so innovation was performed to some extent before the closing of the company. And so now we are in the execution phase. We have already started to test the first sales, which will be delivered afterwards to PSA. So I do believe that from a technical definition of the battery cells, we are at the good level. Then the question for us is to execute, to build the prototype line, the prototype plant, and then to build the gigafactory in Douvrin and so on. But technically, we do have the appropriate definition. I do believe, at least.
Fantastic planning to start before the project actually starts.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, it's not abnormal. It's you know, it's this battery industry is highly capital intensive. Highly capital intensive. The cost of one single gigafactory, 8 gigawatt hours, is between 500 and 600 million euros. Our plan, within our plant, we are supposed to build six of them till 2030. It's a huge amount of money. And that's the reason why both TotalSaft and PSA have taken time. I've taken time to assess, are we sure that once we'll put this money, this amount of money in the company, we'll get the appropriate return? And the question of the competitiveness of what we are going to produce is obviously paramount. So that's the reason why the roadmap has been, well, I won't say that it was 100% defined prior to the closing, but it was not that far from the 100%. So because it's a huge amount of money to be poured in.
And huge responsibility, but we will come to that. It has also been announced in the media that ACC would also supply other OEMs with battery cells. Was this already taken into account in the capacity figures for the plant plans reported by the media? Are you already planning with this increased demand?
Yeah, I mean, it's clear that we are filling our capacity, the capacity of the first two blocks with the PSA supply contract. Beyond, for the next four, we need to sell to other OEM. So it's clear that to grow the supply, we rely on a forecast of a growing demand. And on the fact that some of these demand will be awarded to ACC.
Do you consider also to be supplier for commercial vehicles in the future?
Like commercial vehicle, yes.
According to the PSA group, there's also a plan to bundle the ACC cells into batteries with a capacity of 60 to 100 kilowatt hour, which should enable ranges of between 400 and 650 kilometers. What chemistry do you focus on, at least for the beginning?
We're going to focus on two different chemistries, one for high-range cars, another one for low-range cars. High-range cars will be nickel, manganese, cobalt, with a share of cobalt which should be less than 10%, and a share of nickel which would be higher than 80%. That's one, and that's the chemistry definition which does allow the highest density of energy and hence the highest autonomy for the cars. We are as well considering the so-called LFP chemistry, so lithium and iron phosphate, which is much cheaper, well, significantly cheaper, but whose energy density is as well lower. We are observing that the market is moving in two directions. So there is a segmentation of the market, high range, low range. Low range might suit to customers who are utilizing their cars only inside the cities and we don't need a high range, a high autonomy, or people who are more constrained from a money point of view. So we see this segmentation and another reason why we are considering those two chemistries.
Very logical segmentation, actually. But this was said from the present point of view. Now let's take a look, a visionary look into the future of battery production. What should the batteries of tomorrow look like? Or the day after tomorrow, even better?
I don't know if it's going to be for tomorrow or the day after tomorrow, but every battery manufacturer is performing R&D activities on the so-called solid-state battery. One of the drawbacks of the existing batteries is the fact that the electrolyte liquid is creating a safety risk. If you have a leak of this electrolyte for any reason, you are almost sure to have a fire and therefore destruction of the car, notwithstanding the impact on the people, etc., etc. So, that's something which would be fixed with a solid state battery. So the electrolyte will get solid, hence you won't have any more issue of safety. You'll be able to grow still more the energy density of your battery. The major difficulty, and that's the reason why so far known battery producer is bringing this definition to the market, is the fact that a solid electrolyte is much more difficult to master in terms of electrical conductivity as opposed to the liquid electrolyte. But we do believe that some days before 2030, we'll be able to produce these solid-state batteries. That is part of our product roadmap. And I think it's a significant breakthrough, because beyond the impact on the safety, it has as well significant impact on the manufacturing process. You need to invest less. So we do believe that it is a battery of tomorrow, this one.
Would be also a bit more sustainable. Talking about batteries and battery raw materials, control and transparency are also extremely important. How do you at ACC see this issue of ethical and social responsibility, and how do you put the theoretical plans into practice? What is ACC's path to sustainability, so to speak?
Well, I mean, it's obviously a very important question. And even though we won't buy our materials directly from the mines, we will buy our materials from chemical companies such as Umicore, Solvay, or BASF, or XTC in China, or CapChem, etc. So even though we will buy from chemical companies, nevertheless, we want to give guarantees to all customers on the origin of our materials. And we don't want to utilize cobalt from artisanal mines in Congo. We don't want to utilize nickel from mines which are utilizing deep sea tailings. We don't want to utilize lithium from salars which are creating hydraulic stress, which is the case for such mines in Chile. And more globally, we don't want to utilize conflict materials. To guarantee this to all customers, what we absolutely need is a full traceability, starting from the mines. And we've started to discuss with the chemical companies. Generally, they completely understand the need. So we are going to trace the origin of the materials from the mines till our factories, in order to be sure that we don't utilize this type of materials. And it's indeed paramount. It's really indeed paramount. We want to be truly environmental and socially friendly. We consider that it's really of utmost importance. We can't pretend being green and clean because we are producing batteries if our supply chain is not green and clean, is not socially responsible. So We've started to discuss with the suppliers, and that's something which will be very important in our supply chain.
Very honorable. Actually, let's go further into the topic of sustainability. Let's talk about battery recycling. Is this also a part of the plan at ACC? And if so, how will you approach the topic of recycling?
No, it's not. It's not, at least for the time being. Maybe at some point of time we will change, but we do consider that the ones which are the best place to recycle are the chemical companies, meaning that they will get back, and some of them have already started to do so. They receive the batteries and they recycle into the flow of the materials they deliver to the battery manufacturers. So that's the way we see the situation. Maybe in some years' time from now, we will consider that differently. But you have to know that for the time being, the quantity of batteries to be recycled is not that big. It's not that big simply because the market of an electrified car is a small one for the time being, and that a battery is deemed to last 8 years on a car and then 7 to 8 years in the storage of energy. So before thinking of recycling a battery which has been produced today, you need to wait 15 years. So having said that, even though we're not considering recycling on our own, we are designing to recycle. And we are targeting that more than 95% of the materials of all cells will be recyclable. That's our target in terms of design. So making the life of the ones which will recycle easier.
Does it mean actually that you work also with recycling companies?
We work with the chemical companies, yeah.
Let me ask you a more global question, let's say, about electrification trend, because it's gaining momentum. This is also supported by the bans announced by governments, and now everyone is working on it, on the electricity grid, on the car themselves, on the batteries, on the charging infrastructure. Actually, we can go on and on. What do you think needs to be done to make the switch to electric cars as seamless as possible? What is your opinion on that?
Well, I do believe that viewed from the customer, there are two hurdles to overcome. The first one is the infrastructure, because when you are buying an electrical car, you want to be sure that it will be possible to recharge your car easily, that you won't have autonomy issues when going wherever you want. And honestly, it's not the case for the time being. For the time being, the infrastructure is not at the appropriate level. And it does explain the fact that some people are reluctant to buy such a car because they're afraid they might not be recharge their car easily. So that's the first hurdle, and clearly it will rely on the public policy to fix that issue. Second point, which I've already mentioned, is the cost of the car. You've observed that all the OEM, they do have within their portfolio of cars, electrified cars now, either a full electrical car or plug-in hybrid cars. So there is no technical difficulty for the OEM to produce such cars. They know, all of them know, and not only Tesla, all of them know. But the real hurdle to overcome is to be able to bring the cost of those electrical cars to a similar value as for a ICE car. And for me, that's the second biggest challenge. I do believe that the citizens, they'll be ready to switch to electric cars, provided they feel secure on the question of the recharge, of the autonomy, etc. And they feel secure, well, they get the impression that they pay an amount which is similar to the one of the ICE. So those are, for me, the two key success factors of the electrical cars.
Actually, you mentioned this segmentation of the market. So smaller batteries, lower range, and so on. So it goes already in the right direction. Actually, now let's come back again to the building structures and hiring. And you're actually currently hiring. Can you tell us also in which area exactly you are hiring people with what kind of knowledge background should apply for a job at ACC?
Yeah, sure. We are indeed recruiting. And for the ones who are hearing these conversation, don't hesitate to go on our website or to write to recruitment@accemotion.com for applying. Whom are we looking for? R&D people, you know that we've started to transfer people from SAFT to ACC, but we need to go much beyond. And SAFT is highly knowledgeable about battery, highly skilled, but it's not a big company, and they can't transfer all the staff to ACC. We can easily understand that. So we're looking for people, electrochemical engineers, capable to innovate and join ACC. At the same time, we're looking as well for people for industrialization. As I've said as well earlier, initially, we are relying on people coming from PSA, but we need as well recruiting people from outside. The process of producing a battery is completely different from an automotive factory. So we need to find industrialization engineers to join us.
Now we are making the transition from technical and strategic topics to leadership and self-development. When interviewing top personalities, it would be a serious mistake not to ask them for their tips and tricks, what made them what they are today. After all, they're not just managers, leaders, they're first and foremost humans. And so all our guests also answer a few personal questions. This makes our guests vivid, real, and authentic. So let's start with that. Jan, what was your best lesson in leadership? What event or mentor perhaps has shaped you the most?
Well, actually, I've spent most of my career working in the automotive industry. I've spent 27 years working for Renault. I've spent 6 years, the last 6 years, working for PSA. And meanwhile, between Renault and PSA, I've spent 5 years working for Alstom Rolling Stock. I had the chance of meeting and working with the two Carlos. So Carlos Ghosn, when he joined Renault, and as well when he came back from Nissan, he promoted me as head of the quality within Renault Group, and Carlos Tavares, who is the CEO of PSA, and whom I know for 40 years. We joined Renault almost the same months and almost in the same engineering division. So we know each other for a long time. And the two Carlos, I don't know if it's if it has something to do with the first name, but the two Carlos are, or were maybe for Carlos Ghosn, are outstanding managers. They are both outstanding managers. One has maybe made some mistakes recently. I don't know, honestly. But I've worked extensively with both of them, and really I've learned a lot from the two of them. And I mean, what's interesting for me that many of the things I've learned from Carlos Ghosn have been learned as well by Carlos Tavares. When he was working within Renault, when he was working with Carlos Ghosn. And I mean, some lessons. First one is set yourself very demanding targets. That's the best way to respect yourself. If you set yourselves targets which are easy to meet, you're not respecting yourself. So that's, I think it's something which is, which might be tough sometime, because having always very demanding targets is sometimes tiring, sometimes too tough. But it's highly respectful of the people. The second point, and I've heard it many, many times. Strategy is 5%, execution is 95%. Meaning that writing down PowerPoints on strategy, I mean, it's easy. It's easy. And particularly, I would say, for French people. French people, they do like strategies, they do like to be very conceptual, etc. But then what matters is how you execute your plan. And that is where a lot of companies are failing. I mean, when you look, for instance, at the plan of PSA in 2014, back in the race plan. So at that time, in 2013, the company was almost bankrupt. So we set up a plan named Back in the Race. And honestly, the content of the plan itself was not outstanding. It was not the revolution. It was something which was smart, but it was not something nobody else could have thought of. It was highly successful. And it was highly successful because we took extensively care to the execution. And that is what makes the difference. Finally, the growth is the reward of a well-done job and not the other way around. Sometimes people do believe that we need absolutely to grow in order to be able to deliver good performance. It has to be the opposite way around. You deliver good performance, whichever the volume, and because you are delivering good performance, then the volume is deemed to grow. That is the way it works. So that's those are my best lessons.
I will take some with them with me, actually. Can I ask an additional question to the first part? Because you said, set yourself goals which are demanding, which are ambitious. Do you apply this for you only or also for your people?
Both. It starts with myself, obviously, but it's true as well for the team. It's true. I mean, you know, when you set a budget, I know all the games which can exist within a company around the budgets, because your compensation package is based on the budget achievement. Some people might tend to say, well, I want to set the budget at a low level in order to be sure to meet the objectives and then to get my reward. You know, I prefer to set a tough budget, maybe to miss slightly the budget and nevertheless to reward the people, than setting a low budget, beating it, but not being satisfied when comparing with the environment, with the benchmarks. So I think setting demanding targets for the team is of utmost importance, but they need to understand that if they fail, if they miss the target, it might not be a disaster. Might not be a disaster. One more time, I prefer them missing a very ambitious target than meeting easily a complacent target.
Quite insightful, actually. And looking at your CV and at your professional past, it's also clear that you had a lot of successes. But now it's easy to talk about successes, right? Let's talk about failures. Which obstacles or failures have strongly influenced you personally?
I would say that the I don't know if it's a failure, but I think it's something I'm not happy with, is the time I've spent in Russia. So I've been very happy with my family in Russia from a private point of view. They were living in Moscow. They had a very nice life. On a professional life point of view, was very difficult. So I spent 1.5 years as chief of operation of AvtoVAZ. So Renault had taken a share of 25% in AvtoVAZ, and was in 2008. And at that time, AvtoVAZ was really in a very bad shape. Beginning of 2009, there was the worldwide economic crisis. So it did hit a company which was already ailing, which was already in a very bad shape. So it did it as well. Renault, who at that time was supporting AvtoVAZ. And life became very, very difficult from a professional point of view. We had no money. We had no support. And when I joined AvtoVAZ, I was thinking, well, I'm going to do within AvtoVAZ similarly to Ghosn in Nissan. Although he didn't ask me that, when he sent me to AvtoVAZ, that was not his request, but that was the personal pressure I put on my shoulders. And obviously, it didn't go as quickly as I was hoping, by far. And so what I learned is that clearly maybe I was too proud to accept not to be as successful as Ghosn. Ghosn did succeed in Nissan in 1 year. After 1 year in AvtoVAZ, well, I mean, almost nothing had moved forward. Maybe I was too impatient. So that's what I learned about me.
So how would you handle something like that in the future? I mean, a lot of years pass by. You're wiser now. So how would you handle this?
I think I'm wiser. Yes, I think I'm wiser. It's very important to understand when you're joining a company, when you're sizing a challenge, very important to get an in-depth understanding of what are the objectives of the different stakeholders. What are they looking for? What are they demanding from you? Not to define those objectives by yourself, which is what I did actually. I put on my shoulders very strong pressure, and I remember when I left Renault at that time. So I met Carlos Ghosn just before leaving, and he told me, but that was not my request. That was not my request. And I told him, well, yes, that was not your request, but that was my own objective. And wow.
Let's talk now about learning something new. Actually, I mean, work would be boring if we didn't have the chance to learn something new more or less every day. But in your case, after so many years in the automotive industry, with so much experience in higher management, in which areas do you still learn?
What has been striking for me during the last, 5 years spent within PSA is that a big company can learn a lot from small startups companies. And that is completely different from the situation which was prevailing years ago. Years ago, we considered that the only ones which were able to innovate, to bring to the market new solutions were big companies. We considered that economies of scale in terms of development, in terms of innovation, were prevailing. That's no more the case. No more the case. The big companies, they can learn a lot from small companies. And, well, that's what's fascinating. I've met, when I was heading the manufacturing and supply chain of PSA, a lot of small companies, very small companies with very bright ideas. And it's really refreshing. It's really refreshing. And that's where I have something to learn. That's where I have something to learn.
Actually, is it also why you like to say ACC is a startup and it will stay in the startup stage as long as it's needed.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Let's sum up now what you talked before, all the challenges you have. You had already immense level of responsibility in your previous jobs. And now you become the CEO of ACC. And as we said before, the expectations are really, really high. What are your methods of dealing with the stress and this growing pressure? What would you recommend?
I'm not sure it's wise what I'm going to say, but 2 points. The first one is that getting older, getting more experience over time, I've learned to disconnect myself as a human being from the professional being. The pressure is on the professional being. It's not on the human being. And that's something which is very important to realize. When you are not achieving objectives which have been set to you by your bosses, by your shareholders, by your etc., you might think, well, it's a shame for me. I'm not good. I'm nil. It's a mistake to think that way. You've not been successful as professional being for any set of reason. It's not something which should hit you as a human being. And I think it's important, or as a private person. I think it's important to be able to disconnect the two situations. Second one, I'm running, I'm jogging. Actually, I used to run, and now it's more jogging. It's a way to get rid of the stress.
There's actually an additional question which I want to ask, because you said you disconnect the professional human being and the person, let's say the private yeah. person. What is success for the private Jan Mansell?
Well, I would say I don't know if it's my success or the success of my wife. I would say it's more the success of my wife. But we have three children. They're all adults. They are married or living with a partner, and the three of them, they are very happy to come back to us for holidays. It's for me. It means that we've been able to educate them properly, because they have the three of them. They have a good job. And at the same time, they're not rejecting their parents. I would say conversely, they are very happy to come for Christmas, during the holidays. So I think it's a success. It's a success. We are quite happy with our children. But I think my wife took more time with them than I did personally. But maybe I'm a small part of this success.
Anyway, it's a success.
Yeah, anyway, yeah.
Do you have also an inspiring life motto that accompanies you through your life? Or is there any advice in your life that was formative for you? Is there something you would like to share with us?
Well, I would say that the way I've always behaved as manager is I trust people. I trust people. I consider that leading people is, first of all, explaining them the sense, explaining them where you want to go in the long term, and simultaneously raise their energy. And what I'm convinced of is that once you've understood where your boss wants you to go, and once you are full of energy, you find your path by yourself. You express your talent, you give that way to the company. I'm completely opposed to managing by defining very precisely everything. I don't think it's the right way. Once I say that, and that's my motto, I trust the people. I trust the people. It's clear that at the same time, I'm controlling as well. So it's not because I trust that I don't control. And I mean, it's clear that if I come to the conclusion that my trust has not been well placed, then I have a major issue with the people. But first of all, I trust the people.
Trust is so essential in all areas. It is the very base of all interpersonal relationships. And again, we end our podcast on such an inspiring note. Thank you, Jan, for this great interview, for the fact that we were able to address such a hot topic with you in the Elite Experts Conferences podcast. Thanks also for the very sincere, not at all political answers. I really appreciate having a personality in the interview who calls things by their name. Also, your attitude towards startups is just fantastic. Of course, I totally agree with you. That's why we bring promising tech startups together with global players to accelerate innovation and to achieve a better and cleaner future much faster. All the best for achieving ACC's ambitions, and of course, all the best for your very personal path. It was an honor to have you here.
Thanks a lot, Ludmila, for this conversation. I appreciate very much your questions, which from my point of view are very relevant. I mean, I believe that with ACC, we are not only a major player for the energy transition, which is one of the major concerns for the humanity nowadays, and I do believe that ACC is one of the major players for this transition. And second, I'm really proud that ACC will contribute to re-industrialize to some extent Europe with a high technology industry. Being able to supply high technology products from Europe instead of only from Asia, for me, it's rewarding. So thanks a lot for this interview.
There are many ways to achieve a more sustainable future. There are many companies and innovative leaders who choose and actively go very different ways. Let's just not forget one thing. No matter how different the ways are, the big goal is one and the same. See you very soon in the next episode.